Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Wednesday, August 14th, 2019. Coming up this hour.
Germany's economy contracts as the trade war hits exports.
China posts the weakest industrial output growth in 17 years.
U.S. bond spreads inch closer to inversion.
The relief rally on delayed tariffs appears short-lived as U.S. futures slump and the yen strengthens.
The warden of the jail where Jeffrey Epstein died has been reassigned, and two employees are on administrative leave after reports of falsifying records. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm Rob Buschka. Coming up in sports, the Yankees win their 80th, Herman his 16th, and the Mets taken down by a one-man show.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 991 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm John Tucker. Bloomberg Daybreak is being brought to you by Portfolio Analyst, powered by Interactive Brokers. Savvy investors use Portfolio Analyst to create a consolidated view of their finances and check the health of their complete financial portfolio. Download for free at ibkr.com/PA.
And bonds are rallying as global stocks slump. It's 6:01 on Wall Street. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down almost 18 points. Dow futures down 157 points. NASDAQ futures lower by nearly 55. The DAX in Germany down 1.2%, while the CAC in Paris is down 1%. The 10-year up 19/32nds. The yield 1.63%. Same with the 2-year, 1.63% yield. West Texas Intermediate crude oil down 1.2%, down 69 cents at $56.41 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.1%, down $1.70, 15.1240 an ounce. The euro 1.1177 against the dollar. The yen 106.34. And the 30-year treasury yield has fallen, John, to a record low, 2.0813%.
Pretty remarkable. Let's begin, Nathan, with the latest economic data confirming a global slowdown. Germany's economy shrank 0.1% in the second quarter as exports slumped. We get more from Bloomberg's Jana Randall in Frankfurt.
The contraction was driven exclusively by exports falling faster than imports. Private consumption, government consumption, investment, all that rose in the second quarter. So domestic demand was positive, but exports tipped the German economy over. That shows you a little bit how vulnerable Germany is to trade tensions, to softer global economic growth, and there is no real turnaround in sight.
The German economy has now contracted in two of the last four quarters, raising concerns about a recession. John Hardy is head of FX strategy at Saxo Bank.
It's a strong likelihood that we do see a recession, two quarters consecutively of negative growth. And the ECB is mostly out of bullets. They can lower rates a tad more. They can, of course, restart quantitative easing, but this runs into these political issues. So I think the key is the fiscal side of things and whether that comes on board and whether it can come on board in a solidary fiscal union kind of way across the European Union. And if it doesn't, then the European Union's in heaps of trouble. And ECB is there merely as an accessory in that process.
Meanwhile, we also have a GDP reading on the entire euro area economy. It grew 0.2% of the second quarter. That's in line with estimates.
Now, the trade war also took a bite out of growth in China last month, with industrial output, retail sales, and fixed asset investment all missing estimates. Bloomberg's Tom McKenzie has details from Beijing.
When you look at industrial production, the weakest growth in around 17 years. So the trade war certainly pressuring the industrial sector. And then there's the consumer. Here we're seeing retail sales growth of 7.6%, a full percent below the estimates. Fixed asset investment also slowed. And again, there was an expectation that that would stabilize. Moody's Analytics describing the data as totally woeful. Bloomberg Economics saying, look, the economy has not bottomed. And they are suggesting that we're going to get more aggressive stimulus going forward.
So far, policymakers in China have passed tax cuts to boost spending, but it hasn't been enough to stem the slowdown.
And there is a bit of a relief on the trade front as President Trump delayed imposing new tariffs until December 15th. Bloomberg News has learned Chinese officials still plan to visit Washington next month for talks, but are not optimistic of progress anytime soon. Let's get more from Bloomberg's Jeff Black in Hong Kong.
from the perspective of officials in Beijing, I think they have been burned a number of times by expectations of a deal. People are very cautious at the moment. This latest delay is transparently about U.S. domestic opinion. It's probably going to do very little to make officials in Beijing enthusiastic.
Sources tell us Chinese officials are unlikely to make concessions of the run-up to October 1st when they celebrate 70 years since the founding of the People's Republic.
Still, stocks in Asia greeted the news with a bit of a relief rally. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally joins us from Singapore with details. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Nathan and John. Japanese equities outperformed despite strength in the yen on the back of weak Chinese data. The offshore yuan and Aussie fell. In Hong Kong, the Hang Seng recovered some ground following Tuesday's more than 2% loss. The tariff delay boosted semiconductor stocks in Seoul and Taipei, while the Korean won jumped the most in 9 months against the greenback before pairing some of those gains as local importers bought dollars. In Singapore, I'm Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Juliet. U.S. bonds yields are falling as the spread between twos and tens nears inversion. We're seeing the 10-year yield right now at 163.18. Scott Minard is Chief Investment Officer at Guggenheim.
Bonds have had quite a move. You know, I do think we may have some room here further down, maybe to like 1.4% on the 10-year note. But ultimately, I think we will get some sort of relief from this and see longer rates rise later in the summer.
And we just have an inversion on that part of the curve. The two 10-years right now have just inverted, Nathan.
And finally, John, Hong Kong's airport at least has resumed normal operations. And now authorities are restricting access to terminals to prevent more demonstrations. Bloomberg's Yvonne Mann is at the airport with the very latest.
Security here is tight. What they're saying now, how they're going to enforce this, is that they're checking passengers' air tickets. And if you're someone that's departing in the next 24 hours, you are able to come in. Even when we were trying to come in, we had to show our press passes as journalists as well. So they are guarding some of these doors here. We're still seeing a pocket of protesters that came earlier, but a much, much different and tamer scene than what we saw yesterday. We're also hearing that there's a bit of crowd control with the Airport Express. This is a subway station that gets you into the city from the airport. They are also reducing the intervals of those trains to 25 minutes from 10 minutes.
And China's ramping up its rhetoric on the protests, saying demonstrators are acting like terrorists. This is Bloomberg.
And more on this curve inversion right now. It is 6:07 on Wall Street. And let's head to Michael Barr for the latest news from around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, John. Two employees of the prison where Jeffrey Epstein died have been placed on administrative leave, and the warden has been reassigned. This after several law enforcement officials with knowledge of the matter say the guards did not check on the suspected sex trafficker for 3 hours. They're also accused of falsifying records to cover up their mistake. Top Democrats are trying to keep the focus on gun legislation that stalled in the Senate. Bloomberg's Martin DeCarroll reports.
Legislation requiring background checks on all gun purchases, including online and at gun shows, would not stop all shootings, says House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer. But he says that makes it no less worthy of action.
95% of Americans support it because they believe it is a significant and important step to take in the face of this violence.
Hoyer and other top Democrats stood alongside victims of gun violence at a Capitol Hill news conference, a move designed to keep the issue of gun safety on the congressional agenda because Congress has repeatedly failed to take action in the wake of other shooting massacres. In Washington, Martin DeCaro, Bloomberg Daybreak.
The Los Angeles Opera is opening an investigation, and concerts have been canceled by two music companies after numerous women accused opera legend Placido Domingo of decades of inappropriate behavior. China is taking steps to insulate the mainland from the protests that have gripped Hong Kong. On top of tightly controlling local media coverage of the demonstrations, authorities this month started keeping closer tabs on citizens who travel there. President Trump made a stop at a new Shell plant in Pennsylvania outside Pittsburgh. In Monaca, the president praised traditional energy production and went after wind-generated energy.
I'd like those big windmills that destroy everybody's property values, kill all the birds. Someday the environmentalists are going to tell us what's going on with that. And then all of a sudden it stops. The wind and the televisions go off.
Democratic presidential candidate John Hickenlooper is said to be thinking about ending his run for the White House. The New York Times is reporting the former Colorado governor is in discussions about entering the race for his state's Republican-held Senate seat. Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
All right, Michael, thanks a lot. 6:10 on Wall Street. Time now for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's Rob Bushka.
Good morning, John. For the Yankees, it felt like most of their 80 wins tops in the American League.
Lined hard down the left field line. It's a base hit going to the left field corner. One run scores Roman. Here comes the second run home. Tuchman. The throw is not in time. It is a two-run double off the bat of Aaron Judge.
Yankees radio 8-3. They beat Baltimore at the stadium to increase their lead to 9 over the Rays. It's the fourth win in a row for New York, who leads Houston for the best record in the American League by 2 in the win column. Domingo Herman tossed 7 solid innings to win his Major League best 16th game, lowering his ERA to sub-4. Yankees go for the sweep this afternoon. It's day baseball from the Bronx at 1:05 when Jay Happ hosts Dylan Bundy. Mets, they were beaten 5-3 in Atlanta by their young phenom, Ronald Acuna Jr.
Acuna hits one well to deep left field. He just branded his name on this thing. Deep to left field and into the seats for a home run. Rounds the bases after his 34th home run of the year. What power by this young man.
Braves radio, the 21-year-old also threw out Todd Frazier at the plate to help preserve the win. To make matters worse, the Mets lost All-Star Jeff McNeil to a hamstring injury. He's day-to-day. Series continues tonight at 7:20 when Steven Matz faces Dallas Keuchel. In NFL camps, Giants wide receiver Golden Tate lost his appeal on a 4-game suspension for a banned substance he says was a prescribed fertility drug. That's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. John?
All right, thanks, Rob. And a big recession indicator in the U.S. is flashing red this morning. We have had an inversion in the 2-year, 10-year curve. Right now, it is negative half a basis points. The 2-year is at 163.19. The 10-year, 162.84. And this is the futures in the U.S. The stock futures decline. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And we'll look at the curve inversions and the bond market in general just ahead with Kit Jukes of Societe Generale. You're listening to Bloomberg.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Nathan Hager. This update is brought to you by IBKR and CME Group. The new micro e-mini futures contracts are available at IBKR at the lowest commissions. Learn more at IBKR.com/CME mini. 30-year yields have fallen to their lowest level ever as investors seek shelter amid a fraught geopolitical backdrop and increased concern about the impact of the escalating global trade war on economic growth. Stream of investors into the safest parts of the market has triggered yet another recession warning, with the 10-year Treasury yield now below the 2-year. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are down now 24 points, almost 24 points now. Dow futures down 210 points. NASDAQ futures down 75. The 10-year at 1.62%. The 2-year 1.63%. West Texas Intermediate crude oil is down 1 2/3%, down 96 cents, $56.14 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.3%, up $4.70 at $15.19 an ounce. The euro 1.1185 against the dollar, and the yen 106.18. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Nathan. Two guards assigned to watch accused sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein. The night he apparently killed himself in prison, have been placed on leave, and the warden has been reassigned. The Justice Department made the announcement amid mounting evidence against the understaffed Metropolitan Correctional Center in New York. Hong Kong's airport resumed normal operations after a chaotic night of protests in which demonstrators beat and detained 2 suspected infiltrators. President Donald Trump warned of Chinese troops massing on the border. In baseball, the Yankees beat the Orioles 8-3. The Mets lost. Boston won along with the Nationals. The Giants beat the A's 3-2. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
Yeah, Michael, thanks a lot. 6:20 on Wall Street. We're live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. Well, the race to the bottom just got turbocharged. Let's bring in our next guest, Kit Jukes at SocGen. We're fortunate to have him here on this historic morning. Kit, two tens, inversion there. 30-year falls to a record low, 30-year at 2.06%. Are you going to tell me this time is different?
No, this time's not different. I mean, everything's different in the sense that we're in uncharted territory for bond markets all over the world. So, you know, I think if I tell you anything, it's that the United States isn't an island. The Treasury market's not an island. We've got bond yields at, you know, minus 62 basis points for 10 years, minus 64 basis points for 10-year yields now. You know, we've got negative yields in Japan, so everything's being dragged lower, and I don't think the United States can stand apart from that anymore at this point in time. So,
are we headed to a zero or below in the U.S.?
Whether we get there in this run and this cycle, I don't know. But in the next economic downturn, you know, the Fed will have to be easing. I really struggle with the idea that we can have another round of easing once we start pricing that all in, and we don't get rates pretty close to zero if pushing through, if not getting through. And you know, so this cycle, the next cycle, how close? We're just going to get closer and closer, and we'll get there one day. I think that's. You know, we haven't solved the problem that takes us there in the long run. But, you know, we also saw record levels of household debt yesterday in the United States when those data came out. So, you know, we've got lower and lower rates. We're borrowing more and more, which means that when rates go up, it causes more and more of a drag on the economy. This is kind of true globally. And we've still got the big disinflationary forces that mean consumer price inflation doesn't really get going higher. So take that through. I think with the pattern that's been true for all of my career of lower lows, lower highs in rates and bond yields, we're not done. So that gets me through zero sometime.
Does is this a wake-up call for the folks on the fiscal side of things?
It ought to be the wake-up call for the folks on the fiscal side of things in Europe, for sure, because they already have negative yields. They already have a quantitative easing program that they keep on telling us there's more room to do stuff, but we're not sure we believe them anymore. So I think, you know, the United States has you know, one of the reasons the U.S. economy has outperformed everybody else so much is that fiscal policy has been brought to bear on the U.S. economy, and that's, you know, in a sense, that's been one of the successes of the last 24 months. But, you know, you're probably not done yet. I mean, what is going to happen is the economy is going to slow over the next 12 months.
How does this change the calculus for the Federal Reserve at this point in the U.S.?
I think the Fed's in a difficult place, probably watching. I mean, you know, they'll certainly want to maintain a reasonably accommodative bias, despite, you know, the CPI data yesterday and the first signs that the trade war is having an impact on consumer prices in some sectors. They can see that there's bits of weakness. They can see the global economic downturn. And you know, the Fed's likely to turn and say, you know, this time is different. Two tens inverting doesn't necessarily mean a recession, but. That they don't want to be the ones who ignored it and just said it really doesn't matter and then watch a recession unfold. So I think what we've seen, this Fed has been more accommodative than just blindly looking at domestic U.S. economic data could possibly have argued. They'll stay that way.
Does QE, is that on the table at some point?
Eventually, because eventually now that, you know, we've opened, if you like, Pandora's box, and now that we have QE in our toolkit, even if we don't fully understand the long-term implications, I don't think we can avoid resisting it, going back to it. But the first thing in the Fed toolkit is to ease rates further and to get them closer to zero. And everywhere else in the world, well, not everywhere else in the world, no, but a bunch of other countries, we've gone below zero and the world didn't end. So I think everything in the toolkit is still there. I think the Fed is still innovative when it comes to unconventional measures, and I'm getting too old to be able to double guess what kind of innovation we could get as well.
Well, there's also the worry, I mean, I'm going to mix my metaphors, that we're pushing out a string at this point.
Yeah, I don't think the U.S. is necessarily pushing on a string, although, you know, I think you could argue that Europe is pushing on a string in terms of policy effectiveness. In other words, I don't think it makes much difference whether rates get any lower than this in terms of this. I think that's why fiscal policy has to come to bear. I'm not so convinced in the United States that it's impossible to help.
Kit, thanks very much. We appreciate your expertise this morning. Kit Jukes from Societe Generale. Just to recap, the 2-10-year spread in the U.S., this is a recession indicator. It inverts for the first time since 2007. And also the 30-year yield in the U.S. falling to a record low this morning. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And the price action as far as stock futures right now, the Dow futures down 244 points. The S&P futures, they're down 27. And the NASDAQ E-mini futures, they're down 84 points. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York.
Bloomberg 1130.
To Washington, D.C.
Bloomberg 991.
To Boston.
Bloomberg 1061.
To San Francisco.
Bloomberg 960.
To the country.
Sirius XM Channel 119.
And around the globe.
The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com.
This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
6:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm John Tucker. We are just about 3 hours away from the opening of U.S. stock trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures and European stocks are lower as bond yields fall. The spread between 2- and 10-year Treasury yields just inverted for the first time since 2007. And we spoke moments ago with Kit Jukes, the global fixed income strategist at Societe Generale.
We're in uncharted territory for bond markets all over the world. So the United States isn't an island. We've got bond yields at, you know, minus 62 basis points for 10 years, minus 64 basis points for 10-year yields now. Negative yields in Japan. So everything's being dragged lower, and I don't think the United States can stand apart from that anymore at this point in time.
On that theme, this comes after weak data out of Germany showing the economy there shrank a 0.1% in the second quarter as exports slumped. We get more from Bloomberg's Daniel Schaefer in Frankfurt.
Germany's crucial export sector has suffered in the second quarter, and that is definitely piling on more pressure on the German government to do something in terms of a fiscal stimulus. And actually, only yesterday evening, Angela Merkel, the German chancellor, has hinted that she might be open for some kind of fiscal stimulus, depending on really what's going to happen in the third quarter with the German economy.
And there's weak economic data out of China as well. For more of that, we turn to Bloomberg's Enda Curran in Hong Kong.
The latest readings from Beijing reveal weakness across the board on both the demand and supply side of China's economy. Industrial output grew 4.8% in July. That is the slowest pace since February 2002. Retail sales growth also slumped and fixed asset investment slowed. Economists are beginning to call for more aggressive measures from policymakers, even in the face of rising debt and persistent financial stability risks. In Hong Kong, Enda Curran, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Enda, thanks. On the trade front, Bloomberg News has learned Chinese officials are sticking to their plan to visit Washington next month for negotiations, but are not optimistic of progress anytime soon.
And in Hong Kong, commerce scene today as authorities restrict access to airport terminals after yesterday's protests. Bloomberg's Stephen Engel is there.
The airport authority now, with this interim injunction, they want to keep the protesters within the designated areas to restrain persons from unlawfully and willfully obstructing or interfering with the proper use of the Hong Kong International Airport. So that's where we stand right now. And that will be kind of the mandate that will dictate how this day will progress.
And China's ramping up its rhetoric on the protests, saying demonstrators are acting like terrorists.
S&P futures down 24.5 points, Dow futures down 227, NASDAQ futures down 76. The 2s-10 spread negative 0.859 basis point. This is Bloomberg.
And thanks, Nathan. 6:33 of Wall Street. This news update now being brought to you by Bernstein Medical. Losing your hair? Modern technology pioneered at Bernstein Medical uses your own hair to create natural and permanent results. Learn more at BernsteinMedical.com, a world leader in robotic hair transplants. Let's get news from around the world. Here's Michael Barr.
Thank you very much, John. A person familiar with the probe of Jeffrey Epstein's death at a federal prison in New York says guards are suspected of falsifying log entries to show they were checking on inmates in his unit every half hour when they actually weren't. Surveillance video reviewed after the death showed guards never made some of the checks noted in the log, according to the person familiar with the investigation. Two employees were placed on administrative leave, and the warden of the Metropolitan Correctional Center in Manhattan was reassigned. President Trump took some time from his week-long vacation to visit the site for a planned Shell natural gas plant in Monaca, Pennsylvania. President Trump told the crowd, mostly union workers, to pressure their union leaders to support his reelection.
I hope you're going to support Trump, okay? And if they don't, vote him the hell out of office because they're not doing their job. It's true.
Immigrants in Texas have sued for release from detention facilities. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter tells us why.
They cite indefinite detention in horrific conditions and have asked a federal judge to order the U.S. to improve the conditions, give them access to lawyers, and release them after 72 hours. The complaint says the U.S. Customs and Border Protection has intentionally packed these people into filthy holding cells for lengthy periods of time where they routinely sleep on concrete floors or concrete benches and are denied access to adequate food, water, medical, and sanitation facilities. It asks for immediate hearing. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
There are new details about the mass shooting in Dayton, Ohio last week. Police tell us they think Connor Betts planned the shooting and they think he acted alone. Dayton Police Chief Richard Beal.
His companion had no idea what he was going to do, nor did he have any knowledge of the weapons that were in the trunk of that vehicle.
Nine victims were killed by Betts, who was also killed. Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
Michael, thank you. 6:36 on Wall Street. Time down for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's Ron Bushka.
Good morning, John. A perfect blend for the Yankees in the Bronx on Tuesday. Power and great pitching as they cruise 8-3 over the Orioles for their AL best 80th win. Domingo Germán, his big league best 16th victory. Skipper Aaron Boone.
Three pitch command and three quality pitches. And I thought today was definitely, the stuff was sharper. I thought his breaking ball was really good today. I thought he had good life to the fastball. Really run. From the start, that the pitch he executed to VR to start the game, kind of up and in, mixed in the changeup. I thought he was in real command tonight.
Herman went seven innings, striking out seven, walking just one. DJ LeMahieu clobbered his 19th home run to cushion the lead as the Yankees have a 9-game lead over Tampa Bay in the East. They're up 2 on Houston in the win column for the best record in the junior circuit. Jay Happ hosts Dylan Bundy. It's day baseball at the stadium. First pitch is 105. The Mets have seen enough of 21-year-old phenom Ronald Acuna Jr. as the outfielder touched them all and threw out Todd Frazier at home plate in a 5-3 win in the sweltering Georgia heat. That could have led to Mets all-star Jeff McNeil pulling his hamstring. Mets manager Mickey Callaway.
You know, all I know, his hammy tightened up on him. He's getting evaluated, and we'll just have to see, what it is. You know, it's just when you react like that, we got to go out there and check on you.
McNeil went 1-for-5, batting leadoff. In football, the Jets signed defensive back Marcus Cooper a day after being cut by Detroit. He's played for four teams since being drafted in 2013. That's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. John?
Ron, thanks a lot. Coming up today, we get another look at the U.S. retail sector. That's when Macy's reports second quarter earnings. With a preview, here's Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger.
Store promotions, digital sales, and rising shipping costs likely caused Macy's second quarter earnings to decline from the prior second quarter. Bloomberg Intelligence says the focus will be on management projections for the second half of the year and the potential impact of the new tariffs on Chinese apparel imports set to begin September 1st. Analysts think Macy's will post a profit of 45 cents a share on revenue topping $5.5 billion. Jeff Bellinger, Bloomberg Daybreak.
And it's now 6:38 on Wall Street.
The following is an editorial from Bloomberg Opinion.
California recently passed a law mandating that presidential candidates release their tax returns before they can appear on primary ballots in the state. Although it doesn't say so explicitly, the law is clearly aimed at President Trump, and rightly so. His conduct suggests such measures are needed. Trump and his campaign have already sued to block the new law, and they may well succeed. Courts are generally wary of state laws that impinge on national politics. California was nevertheless correct to enact the law. It will help reinforce the modern norm that presidential candidates release their tax returns for public scrutiny and signal to Trump that misconduct will be challenged wherever possible. It's unfortunate that such efforts are necessary, but Trump's time in office has been a reminder that, in the absence of oversight, presidents will not always conduct themselves with integrity. This editorial was written by the Bloomberg Opinion Editorial Board. I'm David Shipley. For more Bloomberg Opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPI and go on the Bloomberg Terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
And Bloomberg Opinion editorials can be heard every weekday at this time. And it's 6:39 on Wall Street. Time right now for the Bloomberg Small Business Report. The NFIB Small Business Optimism posted the second highest reading of 2019 for the month of July. It's hovering just a few points below cyclical highs. It does highlight how significant the trade issues are for the sector's outlook. It's a reflection of the trade truce that was later walked back with a series of presidential tweets in the summer. And Bloomberg economist Yelena Shalitova expects the next reading to take a hit.
Obviously, bouncing between tariffs and no tariffs is not going to help business certainty. They need to get some clarification on what to expect going forward in terms of tariffs.
And the participants in the small business survey continue to list quality of labor as their single most important problem. It highlights how tight the labor market is in the United States. The July survey showed small firms increasing compensation, 32% versus 28% in the prior reading, in order to attract and retain qualified candidates. And that is today's Bloomberg Small Business Report. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Dow futures down 243. The NASDAQ futures down 78. S&P futures down 26. This is Bloomberg. And this comes on an historic morning, at least for yields. The 10-year yield below the 2-year rate for the first time since 2007. Also, the long bond of the U.S., that falls to a record low. This is Bloomberg.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Nathan Hager. Futures are tumbling this morning as the yield curve inverts. Let's head right over to the First Word Breaking News Desk for today's morning call with Bill Maloney. Bill, good morning.
And good morning, Nathan. U.S. futures are under pressure as the U.S. 30-year yield fell to its lowest level ever. And like you said, on that inversion of the 2s, 10s yield curve, Dow futures currently down 219 points, S&P's dropped 23, and NASDAQ futures declined by 70. The U.S. 10-year yield drops to 1.62%. Gold is higher by 6. And note that China's July industrial production grew at its slowest pace in 17 years overnight. European markets are also under pressure, led by losses in Germany and Italy. And back in the U.S. on the economic front at 8:30, the import price index. After the bell last night, Myriad Genetics missed estimate. Shares down 24% in the pre-market. And regarding earnings this morning, look for Macy's to report around 8 a.m. In deal news, Presidio to be acquired by BC Partners for $16 a share in cash. And wrapping things up, Ferrari was upgraded to buy over at Goldman Sachs. Myriad Genetics downgraded to neutral at Piper. And CBS was upgraded to buy over at Bank of America. Live from the First of Breaking News Desk, I'm Bill Maloney. Nathan.
Okay, Bill, thank you. To hear live breaking news over your Bloomberg, type squawk on your terminal, S-Q-U-A-W-K. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. And now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Nathan, Hong Kong's airport has reopened after days of violent clashes between thousands of pro-democracy protesters and police. Hundreds of flights were canceled Monday and Tuesday as protesters blocked terminals. A person familiar with the probe of Jeffrey Epstein's death at a federal prison says guards are suspected of falsifying log entries to show they were checking on inmates in his unit every half hour when they actually were not. It said surveillance video reviewed after the death showed guards never made some of the checks noted in the log. In baseball, the Yankees beat the Orioles 8-3. The Mets lost. Boston won along with the Nationals. The Giants beat the A's 3-2. Finally, from Daybreak on the Bloomberg, Americans are sitting out on pricey vacations and everyday leisure activities. A Bankrate survey found more than 40% of adults opted out of a getaway in the past year specifically because of the cost. Nathan, more than two-thirds opted out of a recreational activity due to the price at some point.
Yeah, it happens. But you know what? Best vacation? Nice nap. That's what I've learned.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
You need to talk to somebody's wife. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan. Keep it real.
We'll take that vacation soon enough. We're coming up to 6:50 on Wall Street, and we are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. Time now to check what's going on in D.C. Some of the top stories in our nation's capital include U.S.-China trade talks appear to be back on track for next month in Washington after the tariff delay. President Trump warning of Chinese troops moving to the Hong Kong border amid days of unrest at the international airport in Hong Kong. Federal Trade Commissioner Joe Simons telling Bloomberg he's prepared to break up big tech firms, even if it means undoing past mergers. Also making news, President Trump touting new manufacturing jobs in the Rust Belt, even as the possibility of recession threatens to muddy that message. And for more, we're joined by Bloomberg Washington reporter Kathleen Hunter. And, of course, the sign of recession this morning, Kate, the 30-year Treasury yield at a new record low, the 2s-10 spread falling below 0 basis points. This as the president takes his manufacturing pitch to Monaca, Pennsylvania. Are we seeing a disconnect here?
Absolutely. And I think the president is maybe helped, at least in the short term, by the fact that the worrying signs that are being seen, particularly in the manufacturing sector, haven't yet resulted in a significant decline in jobs. But I think the concern is that that could be on the horizon. We've seen manufacturing output decline now for two quarters in a row. And I think that the concern is that that could translate into, some job stagnation down the road. And what we're hearing in the meantime is Trump, essentially touting his own record on, as he puts it or as he sees it, as he's telling his voters, really getting the manufacturing sector back up and running. Now, the question for Trump electorally is whether the reality of what's going on beneath the surface catches up with the disconnect between that and what Trump is saying in time for, Democrats to take advantage of that in 2020.
You mentioned some of the indicators there. Are voters themselves on the ground seeing some of those indicators play out in their own lives at this point?
Yeah, I think certainly there's some anecdotal evidence of that. I think the question really is in these big key battleground states, places like Pennsylvania and Michigan and Ohio, all three of which went for Trump last time around. Michigan in particular was interesting given that a Republican, it had been 28 years since a Democratic presidential candidate had lost that state. I think the question is whether enough of that is being felt in order to make those that pitch that Trump is making very, very solidly right now about him, the fact that he perceives himself as more beneficial to those states, particularly to the blue collar workers in those states, whether it's just a one off in terms of the folks that are feeling that perhaps he hasn't really made good on those promises, or whether there's a broader sense of that, and whether or not that broader sense, if it does exist, translates into support for Democrats. All of that remains to be seen.
And you've got to think, just for the fact that the president showed up in Pennsylvania yesterday, he realizes just how important states like Pennsylvania, like Michigan, are to his reelection chances. Obviously, they were crucial in 2016. Then when you think about how states like Texas are showing signs of turning purple, that he really may need to have a repeat in the Rust Belt.
Absolutely. And I think Trump's campaign strategy so far, this is not the first time by far that we've seen him go to the Rust Belt. We've seen him make several trips to Rust Belt states in recent weeks. And I would expect that to continue, because I think his reelection campaign certainly is crafted around the idea of those states and winning those states being critical in 2020.
Also expecting the president to headline a rally in Manchester, New Hampshire this week as well. Want to turn to the Democratic race, because we're seeing a lot of candidates, particularly those whose day jobs are in the Senate, laying out their policy proposals potentially for their presidential campaigns through legislation.
Absolutely. And this is something that we see every cycle when members of Congress do run for president. I think it's particularly pronounced this cycle, given that we have so many, a record number of Democrats in the field, and that about half of them do come from Congress. And so in a lot of ways, it makes sense, because you can have your staffers, your, you know, congressional staffers from your office craft a policy proposal and put it out there. And you're not paying campaign staffers to do that. You're doing that on your, you know, on your Senate tab or your Congress House of Representatives tab. And at the same time, that allows you then in these debates, and we've seen this happen already in the first debate, we saw Bernie Sanders be challenged on his Medicare for All proposal. And he essentially said, look, I know it. I wrote the darn bill.
Right.
So I think that that is pretty indicative of what we're seeing here now, other candidates taking up that kind of approach. And it allows them to kind of stake out a policy position very clearly and also makes them look like they're not someone that's afraid of tackling complex policy issues.
Thanks for censoring yourself for Family Radio there. What other examples are we seeing of legislation that that these senators running for president are putting forward? And I guess I'm sort of projecting the answer here. I mean, do any of these actually have a chance of passing a Republican-controlled Senate?
In a word, no. I mean, it's not like some of these proposals. It's not like Medicare for All, or for example, another example is, you know, Kamala Harris, as the senator from California, has introduced a bill to legalize marijuana, and that has been co-sponsored by Cory Booker of New Jersey and Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts, two other senators who are also running for president. Neither of those proposals is likely to get any traction, particularly in a Republican-controlled Senate, as you point out. I think the so the reason why they're doing that is not necessarily to gain legislative traction, but to allow them to benefit their presidential campaign.
And just quickly to, make themselves stand out among the other candidates?
Oh, absolutely. And that's a very good point as well, is that, you know, particularly for some of these candidates, like Amy Klobuchar is someone who, the senator from Minnesota, she's someone who has been polling very low and hasn't really had that kind of breakout moment. And she's actually the senator who so far this year has introduced more bills than all but two other senators. And so I think she's a good example of someone who's kind of hoping to translate these policy proposals into a breakout moment, but so far, nothing yet.
All right. Bloomberg Washington reporter Kathleen Hunter, thank you as always. It's 6:56 on Wall Street.
The following commentary is from Bloomberg Opinion.
I'm Liam Denning, a columnist for Bloomberg Opinion. Beaten down energy stocks have led some to question whether the public market is broken and it is time for companies to consider going private. But public markets appear to just be wising up. Investors used to own energy stocks to gain exposure to the underlying commodities. Experience has taught them, however, that rallies in things like oil prices rarely make their way into shareholders' pockets. And now broader forces, ranging from trade wars to climate change, make it tough to bet on where prices will go. Lower valuation multiples reflect that benefit of the doubt slipping away. I'm Liam Denning. For more opinion, please go to BloombergOpinion.com/opinion. Or OPIN Go on the Bloomberg Terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
And you can hear Bloomberg Opinion at commentaries every weekday at this time. S&P futures lower by 25.5 points now. Dow futures down 237 points. NASDAQ futures down 75 points. The 2s-10 spread inverted for the first time this morning since before the financial crisis. And now it is very slightly positive, essentially flat, with the 10-year Treasury yield at 1.61, close to 1.62%. 2-year treasuries, 1.61%. The 30-year yield at 2.0669%. That is close to a record low. Bloomberg Surveillance up next. For John Tucker, I'm Nathan Hager. This is Bloomberg.